Today is the 19th of April. The time is 5 minutes after 4, but we have a meeting that we'll be able to have for about 55 minutes, and we have a majority caucus, so we'll be moving right along here. We have a quorum of the committee. We have Representative Davis, Representative Davidson, Representative Gall, and myself, Representative Gruenberg. We have the first bill that we're going to deal with. We have an out-of-town guest, and I'd like to take his testimony on it, is Senate Bill 157. Civil fines violations for liquor license. We have Mr. Schirach from the Liquor Board. Mr. Schirach, would you care to come on up and walk us through this bill? Then I want to see if we I want to talk to him.
I would like to extend the courtesy to testify all this.
Of course, I don't mean to be rude. We have visited with this bill in the House Committee before, and I think we're somewhat familiar with it. So please go right ahead.
May I continue? Mr. Chairman, first of all, thank you very much for the courtesy of sending me in front of you here first. I've been listening to your floor session, and I know you've had a lengthy day. I believe I had discussed with Mark Hanley, tuning our attorney in by telephone from Anchorage. If that's underway, what I might do is just give a brief summary of the bill for Representative Davis related to what the intent is. And I'll start by saying that the board's ability as a quasi-judicial body to suspend licenses occurs under three circumstances. One is when it is a conviction of a licensee. Two is where at an informal conference prior to the convening of an administrative hearing, the board may settle a matter with a licensee. And third, upon receiving a recommended decision from the hearing officer following a formal hearing under the Administrative Procedures Act. Those are the only three times when the board may impose a sanction in the form of a suspension against the licensee. This piece of legislation is intended to add or enhance the board's flexibility in relation to being able to settle with a licensee with the intent that an administrative proceeding not have to go forward, which costs the state and the licensee money. In both of the first two instances or situations that I mentioned, a licensee comes before the board and the board may suspend, but the licensee has the ability to disagree with the board. This legislation intends that the board be able to impose a lesser suspension and impose a monetary fine upon the licensee with the intent that the business not be closed down for as long as might take place if the board were to suspend under the guidelines of the statute. This legislation is not intended to raise any revenue. It's not intended to punish licensees. It's intended to give the board some additional flexibility, but not power, if you will. I think that's been a misinterpretation that has surfaced during the dialogue concerning this legislation. The board doesn't necessarily want any power, so to speak. It wants the ability to settle matters as rapidly as possible with licensees when there is a violation for which the board has the ability to suspend. With that summary, I will conclude my preliminary comments, and if you have any questions, I know Representative Gruenberg had some issues that you raised in House Judiciary or House Test Committee, and I have apprised our attorney of those issues, and I think he can certainly answer any questions that you may have in that particular area.
I see. We have Jim Forbes on the line. Mr. Forbes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Any questions at this point for Mr. Schirach? I'm Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, One of your comments, sir, was that you said that it's not intended to punish a licensee in any way, but isn't issuing a civil fine a punishment of some kind?
In the sense of it being a sanction, it certainly does punish the licensee. What I intended to mean there was that it wasn't intended as an additional punishment over and above a suspension. A suspension would have to take place, but this gives the licensee and the board the ability to negotiate a settlement, if you will, which might include a suspension and a fine where the fine would take place of a longer period of suspension that the licensee might be sanctioned with if the board would only have the ability to suspend.
So what, I'm trying to review the statute, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
I don't want to delay this because I know...
No. We're going to take testimony today. We are not going to move the bill.
Very briefly, are these fines for, let's say, violation of, let's say, dispensing alcohol to an intoxicated person, if that is possible, would that be subject to a fine by whatever board, ABC, whatever board administers?
Yes, it would.
So this would give them another tool for enforcement other than just ripping the license.
That's absolutely correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for answering my question.
Other questions for Mr. Schrock? I'd also like to welcome Representative Etlas to the committee as well. No other questions for Mr. Schrock? If you would, you're welcome to stay up. Is there anybody, Mr. Coffey, wanted to testify
yes.
to?
I can step aside.
Fine. Okay. We'll take Mr. Coffey and then we'll take Mr. Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Coffey. I am the lobbyist for CHAR and ARBA, which are the liquor organizations and hospitality industry. The industry supports this bill for a variety of reasons. First of all, it does increase the flexibility of the board. It enables the board to do more things with its enforcement. Frequently, what can occur is a violation of a relatively minor nature can occur, and virtually there is no sanction imposed because the sanctions are so severe. You don't want to close a business for a week or 2 weeks for a relatively minor inadvertent breach of the law. The second thing is that frequently what happens is a licensee will do something or make a mistake, and he should suffer the consequences. And if you don't have a sanction such as a fine, you have a closure instead, you hurt the business's landlord, his employees, his vendors, and all the other people who are dependent on that business. And it's more of a shotgun approach if you just shut down a business for a violation. We think this is a more sophisticated approach. You can range the fines from a very small amount to a very large amount, and it just fits the circumstances a lot better. And we would urge the committee to pass this bill out with a due pass recommendation. We think it's good for the industry, and we think the board would be able to use this tool for the public interest very well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Coffey. Before you go, we have some questions.
Well, just one question, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure who answers this, but line 26 says the board may not impose a civil fine unless the licensee consents to the fine. So they have to agree, the person that's getting fined has to agree to a fine?
I'm glad you asked that. That was going to be one of my questions. Either one of you gentlemen? Mr. Schrock.
Mr. Dan, that particular section, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, refers to another section of the law, 04-11-370-4. That is a subsection which tells the board that when a licensee is convicted, the board shall suspend. So under that section of the law, the licensee will have already judicially been convicted and fined by a court. Upon that conviction, that immediately comes to the board, and the board, under another section of Title IV, is given guidelines under which it may suspend the license. Say on the first conviction of a licensee, it may suspend from 0 to 45 days, or 1 to 45 days. So what that section is intending is that the licensee has already been imposed a sentence and possibly a fine up to $5,000 already by the court. This is saying that because of that, the licensee, when the board were to impose an additional monetary fine would have to agree. If the licensee didn't agree, then that throws the board in the position of telling the licensee, then if you don't agree with a fine, we can certainly suspend you for 45 days on the first conviction. So I think it's certainly a reasonable approach that, in essence, a licensee is not going to be hit with a fine, double jeopardy kind of thing, if you will.
So if I may follow up on your question, that was one of the concerns I had. Yeah. I don't know why, just because you don't want to do a double jeopardy, it doesn't follow from that premise that the licensee should have to agree to the choice. I feel more comfortable with that phrase eliminated myself. And certainly there's nothing to prevent the board from taking the licensee's desires into consideration. But it shouldn't be, I mean, I haven't heard the argument why one follows from the other. I would feel more comfortable with the board having the discretion, and it may very well be that the board would ask the licensee, but that shouldn't tie the board's hands. Do you have a problem if we eliminate that phrase?
I don't think I do.
Think about it. We're not going to do anything instantly.
Mr. Coffey may have some comment. Jim Ford may have some comment.
We'll hear from Jim after you. Other questions at this point before we ask Mr. Forbes? Mr. Forbes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I would like to say that I was not able to hear everything that Mr. Chirac just said, but I can certainly hear you, and I've been able to hear the other committee members.
Okay, what we're doing now is taking testimony. We may raise some issues. I want people to think about this, and then in the next day or two or three, certainly next week or so, bring this thing back. This bill will be back before us, and I want to work on it a little bit. But we'd like to hear any testimony you have at this point preliminarily, and then I'm sure we'll have a work session and get together and just deal with this informally a bit. Mr. Forbes?
Well, thank you. Thank you. I don't really have very much to say in terms of the particulars of the bill. I don't say this very often, but I find that I'm in complete agreement with everything that Mr. Coffey just said. And I think that it is a good bill in terms of providing the board with a degree of flexibility that it does not currently have, which would hopefully result in a reduction of the amount of money that the board has to spend on administrative hearings. And my experience is that if the board had the kind of flexibility to impose a fine in lieu of a suspension or a revocation, that there are a lot of cases that that would settle that currently do not settle just because the option is not available.
Well, I want the record to show that Mr. Coffey was nodding and smiling at your earlier comment. I think we're all friends here today. Questions for Mr. Forbes? If not, is there any further testimony on this bill? Questions at this point in time? If not, thank you very much. We have to move right along today. And we will be in touch with all three of you gentlemen when we set a staff working session on this very quickly. And we'll do that by teleconference, so you won't have to come down to Juneau. The next bill that I want to get to is Representative Gall in his office there.
Yeah.
Yes, can you come up? Okay. Let us get to House Bill 488, and then we will move to House Bills 538 and 539. And if there is time, we will get to House Bill 55. That is going to be the order here. Well, let me ask you, have you... thank you very much, Mr. Forbes.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Mr. Chairman, it goes kind of like this.
Are you ready to move on?
Well, what I can... there are two ways to...
let's just go off the record, Pam.
All right, then just give me a second.
Okay, let's look to 488. Let us deal with House Bills while Mr. Gall is looking here. Let us deal with House Bills 538 and 539 by Representative Ellis.
Okay, I'm ready.
Are you ready
yeah.
On 488?
Mr. Chairman, I've been working with the sponsor on this.
Representative Donnelly, would you care to join us up here at the table? And Michael, Ms. Ward's welcome to join us.
What I'd like to do today is suggest a committee substitute, get it before us, and move on it in a day or so after the sponsor and I have verified that it's the right way to go. If you prefer to just take the shot and move it today, I don't mind, but if you want to have me check with regard to accommodating other people who are concerned, I'm happy to do it, and I'm happy to move the bill. I just would like to do it right the first time, not have any hassle.
Mr. Donner?
It's your choice.
Representative Donner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the proposal that Co-Chairman Gall is speaking of would be to delete Section 3 of the bill and just leave... We're looking at the sponsor substitute, by the way, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we were looking at the earlier version earlier.
Right, so that all it would add to the existing law is that uses or possesses a firearm in the commission of offense for which the person is convicted.
And Mr. Chairman, I would delete the phrase or possesses. In discussions with the sponsor, the basic thrust here is very specific. If you use a gun when you commit a crime, you don't get SIS.
Yeah,
and that, therefore, the fact that he might have incidentally possessed the firearm was not the issue.
I understand. Representative Donnelly, may I make a suggestion to you?
Yeah.
Time is of the essence in the session. I would suggest that we adopt the CS that would eliminate sub 3 and eliminate on line 13 the phrase or possesses and pass the bill out immediately.
And amend the title.
Amend the title.
To say an act prohibiting suspended imposition of sentences where a firearm is used in the commission of an offense.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're tight and specific.
How do you feel about that, Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, I think that would be fine. I did have another proposed language that I had worked up to try to address the concern that Representative Galder expressed to me, to change it to uses or possesses on the person a firearm in the commission of an offense.
Well, I guess what I was thinking, Dave, was this. You walk into a situation, and you're carrying a weapon, and you end up committing a crime. Mm-hmm. And your weapon just doesn't have anything to do with it. And I thought, if you want to really, you want to get the guys who are using guns in a crime, let me just say it, make it real clear, get the message out. You know, use it and you lose it. And that was kind of my goal, to just be real down to earth about it.
May I make a suggestion to you?
We can work together and develop consensus on this if you'd like.
May I be heard on this? Gentlemen, I frankly tend to agree with Representative Donnelly that possesses on the person, it makes a person pretty dangerous, and I would support that one.
Well, except, Max, when you get into rural areas of the state, there are a lot of guys out there carrying guns, and a lot of them are carrying guns for very legitimate purposes and might get DWI'd or any other kind of situation.
I withdraw my comment.
But I think if a person says, I was intimidated by his possession of the firearm when he was saying, give me all your money,
that's an armed robbery.
You know, I mean, even if he's not holding the gun on you,
still
right?
An armed
so
robbery.
That was my sense, that I even see. In that example, you know, the presence of the weapon was germane to the charge.
That's the use, the,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Representative Donnelly, what do you think about Representative Gall's suggestion? Is that agreeable with you?
Okay.
We are simply waiting for a quorum.
Well, why don't we just why don't I then just write the title here and show it to Dave and go on to the next bill?
Is that agreeable with both of you?
Move it as soon as we have a quorum.
As soon as we have a quorum. Yeah. Okay. At this point, we will move ahead to House Bills 538 and 539, briefly setting.
Yeah, right. That's good. 538 and 539. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't even
concurring
with you,
Mr. Chairman. Representative Ellis is the author of these bills, and Mr. Schoep, did you wish to testify on something? Okay.
I'm waiting to see if you get 5 minutes.
We won't. I don't believe we will, because I want to get to House Bill 55. We have Mr. Chatterton patiently waiting on the other end of the telephone. He's been waiting for a year and a half, and I think it's time to go off the line. So we got to split by five, so we won't
split
get to that,
sir.
I can guarantee you that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate having these two bills before us. I guess it's not necessary for me to go through them, because everybody that's here right now has been through the legislation and through some of the work sessions, the extensive number of work sessions that were held on the legislation. This was a pretty difficult thing to craft. But I think we've done a good job of addressing the concerns of a number of the players who were interested in this legislation. And so I would, like to spend the time that we have listening to any concerns that members have about the proposed child visitation mediation project in the Alaska Judicial Council and trying to respond to any of those concerns.
Now, just before we do, we have this. The Hess CS was adopted already. Okay, Representative Gall.
I would like to thank you, Max, and you, Johnny, for your work on the bill. Today I spoke with representatives of Women's Lobby and also with Art Snowden of the court system, and I'm going to continue now to reach out to the different players. I have developed the belief that we can find true consensus on this bill, that we can resolve the differences of philosophy between the court system and the advocates of this bill, that we can make a determination as to whether or not a single project or two projects is truly in the best interest of the people we're trying to serve, and that that decision can be a decision that you can be comfortable with, and the dads, and the moms, and the custodial moms, and the rest of the groups. I think a little bit of sorting out of the remaining issues is necessary, and it's taken us much farther than I thought would be possible. So far, that when I spoke to Snowden today, I was convinced that we can find the most efficient, the most effective, the least frightening, and the least prone to turning into something else solution and make everybody happy. And so I'm going to volunteer, if both of you will permit me, to try to organize a few informal mediation sessions to kind of try to find the pathways to that, and by that I mean in the next 72 hours. And that's sort of my plan, if you permit me to act on it. The people I've spoken to, each of them feel that there are compromises they're going to have to make and there are inevitabilities that they have to live with. And so I'm feeling real positive and confident, and I'd like to take a few days and see what I can do.
What I would like to do, representatives, if it's agreeable with both of you, is appoint you as a subcommittee of two to deal with this bill, and hopefully to have it back before us ASAP, with the understanding it will be put on the calendar here as soon as you are ready with your subcommittee report. Is that agreeable with both of you? Representative Ellis?
Sure.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that's a definite plan that I think we should pursue. I just remember from all the work sessions trying to deal with the court system, and I just haven't seen anything lately that convinces me that their attitude has changed at all.
I don't have any reason to think it has. I think that what hasn't been done yet is to find out, to go back to the roots of this thing, because possibly you remember, I certainly remember how that money got into the budget in the first place, in conference committee, if I'm not mistaken, in the Senate, and Jim Duncan, if I'm not mistaken. Not on the record, please, because I really don't know. I mean, no, leave the tape on, but I don't mean to say Jim's name on the record because I have no idea.
You mean a
few years ago, the intent language and the money that went into the budget that started the court's mediation project. And I want to research out questions like, did they want it in the first place? Did they get hooked on this version after they had some experience with it? What are their goals? Do they have any goals? Where are they coming from on this? What about these task forces and advisory groups? And talking to Art, I just got the feeling that there were a lot of elements to this discussion that had never surfaced because we were working from isolated contexts, specific proposals. I kind of want to, now that the proposals have gotten close and that there's a Senate bill pending that, you know, is a vehicle and your house will pending that is a vehicle, I just want to see what can be done. And I can't say that I disagree with what you said as we look at the history. And I think what you said to some extent applies to all the participants involved. But I think each of them have come to recognize that there are compromises they have to make and inevitabilities they have to face and legitimate risks that are not the parochial interests of any one group, like the unpredictability of where this thing is going. And I think if it's going to be a demonstration project, maybe it needs to have a timeline. Maybe it needs to lead to a specific requirement regarding reporting and further legislation. Maybe it should be a continuing demonstration project. Maybe there should only be one, maybe there should be two. Maybe the court system would be just as happy to have theirs over in the Judicial Council. Maybe they just don't want to take on this idea. When I talked to Art, he spoke of things like limiting the scope, providing protection with regard to equal strength concerns of women
involved.
He said a lot of things that indicated to me he wanted to find something positive here to go forward into the future of the court system with. I think all of the folks who have advocated in a positive way for the bill seem to be very sincere that what they are looking for is a way for people with difficulties in visitation to resolve those difficulties without having to always go to court. I don't think there's anybody who's opposed to that idea. It's fears of what it will mean to my interests that are causing this problem. So I'd like to try to play mediator and see if I can come up with something. I've expressed most of what I've done so far.
Mr. Chairman, could I just ask one thing before. We have Mr. Cotton, Bill Cotton, from the court system, who's available to talk. But I'd like to, if it's agreeable with you, since we now have Representative Miller and we do have a quorum, I would like Andy, please, to dial Bill Cotton up while we're getting him on the phone, if you don't mind, Mr. Ellis. We will come back to your bill in just a minute. By that time, we'll have Cotton on the phone. In the meantime, we can go back to a bill that we would like to take some action on, if it's agreeable with Representative Miller and everyone. We are back now on, and Representative Donnelly, would you like to join us up here?
Mr. Chairman.
Let me get this out here.
While you give it out, to save time, you recognize me, I'll get the stuff on the record.
I recognize
for you.
Hi,
this is Peter. An act prohibiting suspended imposition of sentence for a person convicted of using a firearm to commit a crime. Title. The language would read, the court may not suspend the imposition of sentence of a person who uses a firearm in the commission of an offense for which the person is convicted, and that's the whole body of the bill.
Now, just a technical thing before you move that as a CS. On line 12, we should eliminate the 1.
It's just fine as is. All you need to do is delete the or possesses and put a period after convicted for that.
You're correct. Representative Miller, do you have any questions on that?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
There's a motion. Representative Ellis, any questions or comments? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill, it is now a CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill 488 Judiciary. The bill moves with individual recommendations. Representative Donnelly, thank you very much. I don't think we'll get to the other bill today.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I urge you and Representative Gall to discuss
all right.
The other
okay.
bill.
Okay.
Thank you. We are now going back to House Bills 538 and 539. Representative Miller, the first bill we took up was Senate Bill 157, and we took some testimony, and we are going to flip it on. We took some testimony, and we were going to just work on that bill some more.
Which one are we on?
No, I'm just informing Representative Miller what we did with the liquor bill. And now we are back on House Bills 538.
Well, so what do we have to do with the liquor bill? We can't just kick it
No, I want to work on it. So. We are now back on House Bills 538 and 539. Bill Cotton is on the phone. Mr. Cotton, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Before we get to you, what we had decided to do was to refer this bill to a subcommittee chaired by Representative Gall, and Representative Ellis will be the other member on the subcommittee, unless Representative Miller decides to be. No, he's not. Okay. We will get to you, Mr. Cotton, but first, Representative Ellis was about to say something, then Representative Gall, then Mr. Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was just to inquire about the status of the court mediation project that's contained in the Senate bill.
Maybe I could answer that best by asking Mr. Cotton the question.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Cotton, this is Peter Gall. Mr. Ellis wanted to know the status of the Senate bill. And I've got some questions about your own interest in that bill and where the Judicial Council might fit into unification of our various mediation projects or justification for keeping them separate. Do you have any information on any of those subjects to share with the committee?
I believe that the court systems mediation bill just recently passed Senate Finance.
Thank you very much. I can say that I know that a discussion was held today about the calendaring the bill for the floor, and to the best of my knowledge, they are going to hang on a bit and see what we do.
Mr. Hemingway says the bill is now in Senate rules.
Correct.
Did that answer your question, Representative Ellis? Then we have Representative Gall.
Well, Mr. Cotton, what about the other stuff? What can you share with us generically about your own attitudes about mediation projects, the court system's project and attitudes about its project, the idea of joining them, separating them, anything at all that would give us some sense of your thinking?
We have had very little connection to the court system's proposed mediation project. I have talked briefly with Stephanie Cole about the possibility of the council being involved with evaluating that program, seeing how it works, not with the administration of the program. We have, in fact, only been involved in the mediation bill in front of you folks in the last week and a half. That, of course, was originally set for OPA, and then the court system, when neither of those places worked out, Representative Ellis's office gave me a call, and I just recently checked with the council and got their approval to take part in this process, but that we have only a recent involvement in this bill, and of course, as I said, only a very limited involvement with the other mediation bill.
Thank you very much, sir. And it is correct that you folks would find it an intriguing new project to be involved with this venture?
Yes, I think it would be a worthwhile project. I did run it past the council as a whole yesterday morning, and they authorized me to tell you that they would approve the council taking part in the project. They did have some concerns, and the vote was not unanimous. It was 4-2, but the majority did give their approval for the council to take part in the project.
And would you feel, were there any particular changes that you felt would make it more comfortable to you or your members?
No, we don't have any particular suggestions. I know there's some controversy concerning advisory committee. We will do our best job on the project, whichever way you folks come out on that.
And are you familiar with the internal advisory approach that the court system has taken?
I know that they do not have a separate advisory committee.
Could I ask you to confer with Mr. Snowden on that subject so that I was just speaking with Representative Ellis. We're going to be kind of calling around to the various parties with an interest in this, trying to reach consensus so that we have a bill that it lacks opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the issues that we want to look into are the separation or combination of these projects, whether or not the court system really likes its own project, and whether it would like to give that to you also. How they work, where their successes have been that you could share with us that would help guide us towards a consensus approach.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is real...
I'd be glad to talk to Mr. Snowden about those issues.
Well, we'd appreciate it. One of the things that's a little frightening to people is the random selection approach used by the court system, and that would not be appropriate to this. At the same time, the referral issues are interesting issues you might want to be versed on. At any rate, I thank you. Mr. Gruenberg has returned, and he'll see if there are other questions of the committee members.
Other questions for Mr. Cotton? Mr. Cotton, anything else you want to say?
No, I simply wanted to pass on the council's approval of this project, approval of us taking part in this project.
Thank you very much, sir. With that, I know that we have other bills, and we appreciate your time, and I know you're anxious to get home to your wife and new little daughter, so go right ahead. Yes.
Can I just get your phone number, please?
Yes, would you like my work phone or a home phone?
Let's see, 279-2526, is that work?
That's my work phone.
If you could give me your other one, I'd appreciate it.
It is 274-3212.
Thank you, sir. Okay, well, with that, we'll let you go, and thank you very much, Mr. Cotton.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, this bill is in the subcommittee. Next, any other comments on this bill? These two bills, both 538 and 539, Subcommittee of Representatives Gall and Ellis, chaired by Gall. The next we have is House Bill 55. And, ma'am, are you here to testify on the bill?
No, I just was here hoping I could hear 538-39 and see if I walked in just a hair too late.
Yes, we took testimony on that, and we are referring that to a subcommittee consisting of co-chair Peter Gall and Representative Johnny Ellis. And if you have anything you'd like to testify, we'd be delighted to hear.
No, I don't.
Okay, fine. And they will announce when that subcommittee will be meeting. We will now dial up Mr. Chatterton on House Bill 55. And, okay, it's 279-1433. And we will hear from him, and if somebody on the staff could let Mr. Meninsky know that we are not getting to the other bill today, I'll take care of that. If we were.
Oil and Gas Conservation.
Hi, is Mr. Chatterton there? Is Representative Gall calling for the Judiciary Committee?
Representative Gall, this is Chatterton. Go ahead.
How are you, sir?
Very fine. How about yourself, sir?
Well, pretty well, thank you. It's a pleasure to hear your voice. Representative Broomberg is chairing, and I will turn the phone over to him.
Mr. Chatterton, Representative Chatterton, this is Max Gruenberg. You're here before a meeting, regularly scheduled meeting of the House Judiciary Committee. We have 20 minutes left. We have to be gone at 5 o'clock. This is the only bill we need to consider. We have a quorum of the committee, Co-Chair Gall, Representative Ellis, Representative Mike Miller, and myself are here today. And we have before us House Bill 55. We have the original bill. There's a Resources Committee substitute, and there is a proposed Judiciary Committee substitute. We also have a Resources Committee letter of intent. Mr. Chatterton, would you, and I know we heard a little bit of testimony on this a long time ago, please tell us what the bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very simply, what the bill does, it stems from an MOA, a Memorandum of Agreement between this agency and Region 10 of the Environmental Protection Agency in 1986, and that MOA obligates us to seek legislative changes to AS 31, Chapter 5. The original House Bill 55, Mr. Chairman, that you have before you there, it speaks to four of the requested changes that, and in total are the requested changes that were being made, requested by EPA. And they're pretty self-evident there. I'm not enough of an attorney, Mr. Chairman, to explain them to you. But I have before me a draft of a proposed House Judicial Committee substitute. And that proposed substitute addresses three of the four original requests of EPA. We tried to drop that fourth request of theirs, which dealt with the subject of transactional versus use immunity, and we know it's a very debatable, highly debatable subject, and in the interest of moving the bill along, we suggested that Section 2 and Section 6 of the original House Bill 55 be deleted, and the proposed Judiciary Committee so does. We have discussed this matter, one, with the AG's office, the criminal division thereof, which was one of the original sponsors of the old Section 6 of the bill, the original Section 6 of the old bill. And we have discussed it with the Region 10 attorneys and, in effect, apprised them of the situation that the use of immunity request was a very debatable subject and possibly was slowing the movement of the bill down. And very frankly, Mr. Chairman, we put it to them that here's your opportunity to get three-quarters of a loaf or no bread at all. And so we had both AG's office and the attorney section of EPA Region 10 supporting your House Judiciary Committee substitute, and we here in Anchorage certainly do that and would hopefully react favorably on that substitute. Closes my direct, Mr. Chairman. Any questions?
Mr. Chatterton, you say you're there with one of your attorneys, is that correct?
No, I do not have an attorney here now.
He
was tied up over at Revenue all day long.
All right, well then, let me maybe speed this thing along a little bit. We have a proposed House Judiciary Committee substitute dated April 18, and the members should have that in front of them. What I'd like to do, and Mr. Chatterton, you have that in front of you, right?
Yes.
Okay. What does Section 1 do? Let's stick with Section 1 first. What does that do?
All right. Very simply, Mr. Chairman, Section 1 remove some of the language that was adopted in territorial days for the commission, whereby we are still subservient to the federal government, and makes it quite crystal clear that the authority of the commission applies to all subject, all lands subject to the state's police powers, which are out to the 3 nautical mile limit of the state. And it just it tightens that request up, which was one of EPA's requests.
Okay. Any are there any questions by any member on section one of the bill? Okay, Mr. Chatterton, what does section two do?
Section two, hold one, Mr. Chairman, and I'll do a little flipping here. And boy, you've got to please bear with me, Mr. Chairman. I'm no attorney. But section two of the committee substitute seems to amend 3105050A and seems to delete the word willful, and it makes them subject to a liability which increases, which is an increase of $5,000 a day, which is an increase from $1,000 a day. The $5,000 a day figure is the one that EPA has in their regulations, and that's why they wanted to have it agree.
Okay, well, the way I read this, and I have here with us today, are two staff counsels for the Judiciary Committee, Mr. Hayden Caden and Mr. Andy Hemingway, and I ask them to correct me if I'm wrong. The way this reads under the Judiciary Committee substitute would provide absolute liability, not requiring any criminal intent. It might not even be done negligently. If you violate a provision of the law or a regulation or order, you can be civilly penalized up to $5,000 a day. Absolute liability. Is that your understanding, Mr. Chatterton?
That is my understanding.
And is that in accordance with EPA regulations, that there's strict or absolute liability, no criminal intent required?
That is further what I have been told by them.
Questions by members of the committee? Okay. Representative Miller, do you have any question or comment on that? Can we move on to Section 3 of the bill? Okay, they're nodding and smiling over here, too. Section 3 of the bill. Mr. Chatterton, go ahead.
Okay, Section 3 of the bill, in effect, says that if a person it drops all willfully, makes faults, and so forth and so on. I'm reading here because I sure as heck am not privy to the legalese in here.
Here we go. We've got it in front of us. What it basically says, Mr. Chatterton, is if you knowingly violate AS 1146-630A, it's guilty of a Class C misdemeanor. So what they're saying here is for if you evade this chapter by falsifying a business record, it is only a Class A misdemeanor. And I have some questions about that. Normally, falsifying a business record with the intent to defraud, and here that would be also another intent of evading this particular chapter or a regulation or order, it is only a Class A misdemeanor. And my question is, if the normal criminal thing would be a Class C felony, why is this to be lowered? Mr. Hemingway is going up to explain. Mr. Hemingway?
I just to speak to the difference in the two. In 4630, it's with the intent to defraud, which would be for some kind of financial theft, in effect, is what it would be. Whereas this one is simply an intent to evade the reporting requirement. So it's a slightly different criminal state of mind that's involved.
I understand, but I have some question. Why should this be a Class A misdemeanor if it's normally a Class C felony? The state and the legislature have set a policy that a violation of this chapter should be a Class C felony. And I don't know why they should be lowered for this particular situation.
The only way it was explained to me, Mr. Chairman, is very much that for the purposes of this chapter, 3105, why it was not considered as serious a crime or something of that nature as it was from the rate the Class C felony.
I see. Well, Mr. Caden has pointed out that this basically just simply brings this into conformance. Now we have Class A's and B's misdemeanor, and this makes it a Class A misdemeanor, and it really does up it. It used to be 6 months, and this could be up to a year. So I can understand how they did this. My question is answered. Are there other questions for members of the committee? They're shaking their heads. They don't have any questions. Section 4 makes it a misdemeanor, but it's only punishable by a fine, no imprisonment, if you violate a regulation or order of the commission. So we can understand that. I think that's self-explanatory.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope so, yes. I have one question for you, Mr. Chatterton. This bill has an immediate effective date. Normally, it is our policy not to have immediate effective dates unless there is some good reason to do it. And that would be then, of course, as you recall, effective 90 days from the date of enactment. Do you have a specific need why you need an immediate effective date?
Mr. Chairman, we most certainly do not. And so that there is no requirement for that section.
Okay. Is there anything else you have to say? If not, we can deal with the bill. Do you have any other questions or comments? Do you have any comments, Mr. Chatterton? Otherwise, we can proceed to mark up the bill. Do you have anything else you need to say?
I surely do not, Mr. Chairman. Other than thank you and the committee very much for speeding along.
Well, thank you, and if you stay on the line, you'll hear the committee and its deliberations in the next 5 minutes, and we'll make our majority caucus. What I would like to do at this time is entertain a motion to delete the effective date clause.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ellis moves to delete the effective date clause and delete the that thing from the title. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Is there a motion to move the bill?
So moved.
Representative Gall moves the bill as a CS as amended. Is there objection? Individual recommendations. Hearing not, the bill moves. Mr. Chatterton, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Letterman.
Oh.
Well, he doesn't need to hear that.
Okay. We have a letter of intent. Oh, we've lost our quorum.
Well,
he's
back.
Right here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You do need to move the letter.
I thought Representative Miller had left, too. Okay.
Letter of intent is important.
We have a letter of intent. Let's just take a moment to look at the letter of intent.
Anyone have
a
letter of intent? Resources.
I would like to delay the letter of intent till tomorrow. We'll take this up tomorrow. I want to study it. With this meeting is adjourned, 5 minutes to 5. I want to look at it.